Hello, and welcome to an episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Rethink Possible explores pockets of awesomeness taking place in school districts as told by school district leaders. I'm Bob McDowell, your host. Let's dig in.
Today, I have the pleasure of having Dr. Stacy Stanley talk with us about what she's done with implementing the science of reading. So welcome, Dr. Stanley. I'm happy to have you here, and I'll turn it over to you.
Hey, Bob. It is great to be here with you today. I really appreciate the opportunity to just be able to share some of the work that we've been doing around the science of reading. So, you know, our work as leaders has to be tied to our strategic plan. And a few years ago, our district had updated the strategic plan long before the movement actually came through. We created a comprehensive literacy plan. And as part of that plan, honestly, Bob, we came to realize that just the processes that we were using, the curriculum resources that we were using, it just, our teachers were working really hard. It wasn't getting us where we needed to be. And it was about that time that we started to tap into MDE's offering for training with letters. My teaching and learning team went out. They actually went through a portion of this training themselves. You know, it's online that they go through. It is rigorous. It is 144 hours of training, Bob. It is fundamentally different than any way a teacher has been taught or trained at the college level. Quite honestly, unless a teacher got their certification to teach at a college level in 1975 or before, they were not trained to teach the science of reading. And so, and we've really supported the way that we wanted teachers to teach with guided reading and sight walls and things like that. So we really knew that this was going to be a significant change. And one of the things that we've been doing with our leaders is really developing their capacity around change management and understanding change. So we use a frame of William Bridges' model around transitions, but it's through the lens of Patrick Lencioni's work. I don't know if you've heard of Patrick Lencioni.
Absolutely. Yes. Love Lencioni.
I mean, it really is all about organizational development, quite honestly. And so we started 3 years ago to start preparing our principals for what this change experience was going to be like as we brought this into our system, because we knew it was going to be woefully different than any of our teachers had ever experienced. And so we started digging into that William Bridges model, really understanding that change is about transitions. It's not about the event. It's not about taking a curriculum away and asking teachers to use that curriculum. It is more about the experience that teachers are going through in this particular case with that change. And our principals had to lead that. You know, they were the ones that were going to be in the buildings every day, really equipping our principals so that when what appears to be resistance, which oftentimes it isn't resistance with teachers, oftentimes it is about skill set and wanting to feel efficacious. And we misdiagnose that and we just say it's resistance. So really equipping our principals using that Lencioni model around transitions to really diagnose what's happening at that moment. Is it a sense of loss because I felt so efficacious with using Faltus and Pinnell? Or is it a sense of loss because, quite honestly, I was the one that everybody came to if they needed support and coaching around guided reading? And so really digging into understanding those seven losses, but then more importantly, how do they respond in that moment?
So you've covered really nicely this leadership development and planning ahead of everything. I'm wondering if you can take a little bit of time and talk about what it looked like transitioning or paralleling that readiness of leaders and the readiness of the teachers and what they were going to be doing.
3 years ago, we start sewing into our principles, right? And getting them prepared for this change, while at the same time, we tapped into our early implementers. We know we always have early implementers in our system. And so we had 30 teachers, a little over 30 teachers, actually volunteer to go through the letters training. They weren't being time carded to do this. They weren't given extra professional development days. They said, you know, whatever we're doing right now, it's not working. And we want some different training. So we kind of had a double track going. We're working with the principals. We're building their capacity, getting them trained. There's even a principal module for letters. They went through this principal module while at the same time we have teachers that we didn't call it a pilot because we knew this was going to come on permanently, eventually. And we started to see incredible gains. The thing is, we had to plan and figure out, well, okay, that's great that I have 30 and 33 teachers who were interested in doing this on their own, my early implementers. How am I going to get the rest of my elementary teachers trained? And we had to tap into, for us, we tapped into our education fund. And our education fund is pretty unique in that they align themselves specifically with three aspects of our strategic plan: STEAM programming, literacy efforts, and mental health. They had to pull back from doing typical grants, you know, usually with foundations, you know, teachers will write their grants, and they agreed to pull back from that.
Can you talk a little bit about what that process looked like to help the foundation see the need or switch gears for you?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, it's all about relationship, right? And really being able to connect. About the time I came in, they got a new executive director. And so that actually was really helpful as well. And the strategic plan was created, and then COVID hit, right? The strategic plan was literally approved in June of 2020. And I started in July of 2021. So I was very fortunate that I had this amazing strategic plan. My job was to take the baton and to get the knowledge out there about the strategic plan. As I'm out there and I'm talking about our strategic plan, I'm talking about our new vision and mission, new executive director comes on, and she's a systems thinker. She gets this. And she had a meeting with me, and she said, you know, Dr. Stanley, I'm going over, you know, what used to be funded. I've attended a few of your sessions now. I hear you talking about that vision for each and every. I hear you talking about everything being aligned to the strategic plan and that we're not going to go outside of that. And I know that you are about STEAM, literacy, and mental health right now. What would that look like if we just started funding those items as opposed to funding, you know, the teacher submissions? Let's give it a try. Again, we were in the middle of COVID. I think it was in that storm, it was the perfect place to be, Bob, because teachers weren't thinking so much in the middle of COVID about grants, right? And at the same time, we knew that mental health was important. And so we first started to dive heavily into the mental health, sewing into resources around mental health. It's almost like it was completely and immediately accepted by our external community because they felt like, okay, I can sew into mental health. I can sew into literacy. You know, I need to figure out this STEAM thing, but I can sew into mental health. I can sew into literacy. And for teachers, mental health, that was needed at that time, right? I mean, our mental health and wellness, those are still our efforts. You know, we're still healing in many ways. And truthfully, there was a space of really needing to heal before COVID hit. It just illuminated just how tired our teachers were and everything. That partnership is so important. I actually have our education fund. They attend cabinet meetings once a month, so that they can share, you know, their efforts. We can partner and talk about what are some things that we can do to help those efforts. And honestly, when I, you know, when I invited our executive director in the chair, this is a year before last, to start coming to meetings, I sent it via an email. I said, hey, you know, rather than schedule separate meetings, why don't you just come to cabinet once a month? And she sent a long email back and she said, you know, you sending that out, it may have felt natural to you, but I want to let you know, I sit here with tears in my eyes right now because I have been seeking out a true partnership. And so we worked just in tandem really well together. They wrote to get started, they wrote grants to the city, and we really tied in how mental health can impact literacy. How low literacy efforts can actually impact one's mental health. And so they were able to get a grant from the city. So in addition to some of the, you know, regular funds that we have for capital, we've really leaned in to our foundation. Recently, we've started in partnership holding information sessions about our science of literacy efforts. And what we're seeing, our gains year over year, when we compare them to 2019, so pre-pandemic, are outstanding. I was just out meeting with a principal today in one of our elementary schools. And this year, from fall to winter, he now has almost all of his teachers trained in letters. This year, from fall to winter, they had an increase of 10%, 68% to 78%. And what was amazing is that their Black students went from 40% benchmark to
92%. Wow. Wow. So that is an awesome segment. So thank you for taking that bird walk about the foundation with me. But then getting back to, because when we before we did that, you were just talking about how you had spent 3 years ramping up to this. And now you shared some of the results. But if I take you back to what did that look like to get this to happen after your early adopters kicked in, now you've got this money to help out from the foundation. So now what? Now what happened?
So, you know, we literally use the research around early adopters, and we have your mid-level adopters. But more importantly, our teaching and learning department hired three of the best coaches that I have ever met in my career. We have six elementary schools. I have three coaches. I don't have a coach in every one of those elementary schools. We just couldn't afford that. But we have three coaches who are absolutely astounding. They came to us equipped to do the work, and they are out coaching with teaching teams and the principal. They are really helping them to understand. The first year was, how do I access this data? What do I do with this data? What does this data mean? Helping them define those, and we call them instructional matches. A lot of people call them interventions. Helping them to find those instructional matches. It was a lot of grunt work. I'm going to be honest, Bob. It was a lot of, I won't even say trial and error, because it was more deep than the trial and error, because we were working with beliefs and values. And when you're working with beliefs and values of human beings, there's a lot of emotion that's attached to that. My director of teaching learning and assistant director of teaching learning, it was a lot of coaching them as they were coaching the coaches, because it's about relationship. We came out of year two, me starting to see with our principals that they were really understanding the use of data, that they were feeling agile as they were working with teachers who, as we moved deeper and deeper into the teachers who weren't crazy happy about this change that was happening, they were more agile in using that Lencioni model that's a take on William Bridges' model. They were more agile, and I knew that, not just because I was surveying them to see about their preparedness, because I did do that too, but in addition to that, I would hear it. As they're talking about how they're working with their teachers, they had internalized that model. All of our principals have completely internalized that model. And as a matter of fact, when I was over talking to a principal today, you know, there's a few people that he's still working with. And he's like, so, you know, Stacey, we're just cycling back around and we're going back to what are the losses? Okay, how do we match with care and concern? I mean, they have just internalized that model. It is about systems, Bob. Honestly, it is the systems work that I think in education programs, they don't really prepare us for that systems work. I was very fortunate to work under somebody who really helped me to see and understand that this is systems work, and then to go through a training that brought on, you know, introduced me to Patrick Lencioni's work and his models. And now our job is to really begin to cascade that just so deeply into the infrastructure of our system, that when we onboard new leaders, whether they're admin deans, APs, or whether they're principals or, you know, just a district leader, that becomes part of who we are. It's, you know, implementation science says that it takes 7 years, 7 years to deeply implement something. And we're 3 years in. In no way, shape, or form are we where we will get to. And we are so much further than we were before. You know, I said this when I came in, and, you know, brows kind of, you know, crumpled a little bit there, but I really do believe in going slow to go fast. I know that there is a sense of urgency for our kids, but you have to be methodical about this work. And I came into this role having been a director of curriculum instruction, having been an associate superintendent of academics and innovation. And so this is my wheelhouse. You know, I really knew this. For the average superintendent, I don't know that they have that type of training all the time. And I would say to my team, and I still say the answer's in the room, we have to take the time to find it. Build your capacity around organizational development.
Oh, that's great. That is really great. The question that comes to mind is the one of, if you were going to do this again, now being halfway through this, right? What are some of the big takeaways you'd have or advice you'd have for superintendents? I would say particularly new superintendents who are trying to do all this at the same time, right? Learn how to lead leaders and implement complex change.
We're in education, we're a fast-moving system, right? I mean, one minute we're doing this, and then the next minute something else comes through from a publisher. And then sew into your leaders. You just to take the time to sew into your leaders. You can't assume that they know everything that they need to know in order to prepare them. We just, sometimes we take our principles and we just throw them into the lion's mouth. And taking that methodical approach to really build their capacity, give them a chance to practice, work with them was essential. I mean, literally essential in getting us to the place that we are right now.
So the last question I have for you really is around the idea of you've got the systems in place. What type of benchmarking for you as the leader have you implemented for yourself so you can take stock in what's working, what's not working? Do you have a system set up for yourself to kind of monitor the speed at which you can push the change and the implementation?
You know, I do. And honestly, I was, again, really fortunate. There was not like a superintendent eval system that was in place when I came in. And so I was really fortunate that I got to co-develop that, you know, myself. And very few superintendents get to do that. And I intentionally did not use metrics like the MCAs. I intentionally did not use you know, the traditional metrics that have been used in a vision card or something like that, that is related to superintendent eval. I intentionally we created using a little bit of a model for all employees around satisfaction. And not just, do I like my job? Do I not like my job? But really looking at a few different tools to develop our own that gets at, do teachers feel efficacious? That gets at, to what extent are they prepared to serve the students in their classroom? That gets at paraprofessionals, that gets at custodians. Because I think a superintendent's role is to create this ecosystem where everyone feels efficacious, where everyone really believes that this is their community and they are there to take care of their community. Our ultimate job is to make sure kids are learning, and we know that. But we also know that if the building's not clean, morale is low, and then that impacts student learning. So I set up my metrics around an ecosystem, right? About principals being equipped, about teachers being equipped, but then more than anything about all staff having a sense of connectedness, satisfaction, understanding our vision, understanding our mission, understanding that that is our North Star, and that's ultimately what we're working toward. So mid-year, I meet with our board members. I do have some very specific benchmarks around some areas that we're working on with the strategic plan. And a lot of that is, where are we at with our vision and mission? To what extent are people connected to our vision and mission? Those are some of those questions. Do they believe in our vision, mission, and our core beliefs? Because if that, if those are the driving factors and people, number one, don't know them, or number two, don't believe in them, then I'm missing the mark as a superintendent. And so I always tell when I'm out, I say, it's not about you memorizing, like literally memorizing word for word, our vision and mission. I want it to live in our souls. I want it to live in our souls and therefore the souls of our community. And, you know, this kind of funny. I mean, recently we are going through some budget reductions, Bob. And the one thing that has happened when folks have come to the table, they have stated parts of our vision and mission related to these budget reductions. And honestly, that brings a smile to my face because that lets me know this is living in the souls of the people who are working in the district.
Yeah, it's so important. So important. Well, this is awesome. And I think that I think there's going to be quite a few superintendents out there that are going to get a lot out of hearing what you had to say today and speak to the implementation of the reading work going on in Edina Public Schools. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me and share your insights.
Well, I sure appreciate it. And I am willing to talk to any of my colleagues to see if anything we're doing might work in your context.
Excellent. Well, this has been another episode of Rethink Possible with Bob McDowell. And today our guest, Dr. Stacy Stanley, talking about implementing reading with the leaders and the staff and the students and the community for Edina Public Schools. Thanks so much for listening and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CESO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.